Welcome to the Promised Brand Podcast, where if you are someone who is looking at culture and trying to better understand how to move your brand forward in a strategic way to cut through the noise, the confusion, to get out of the desert of confusion, the sea of sameness, these are the conversations for you. I'm your host, Luke Frazier, founder of Parable Brand, where really we're on a mission to tell brand stories that don't suck so that founders like you can make things that people care about. These conversations are radically important to me, and you being here listening is radically important to me. So radical that I get to say the word radical whenever I want, and that's radical. Jokes aside, I'm grateful you're here because this is a place, it's a safe place for people to build and grow brands that people care about. And right now we're in a day and age where brands are communicating in a way that is confusing. It's inconsistent across the board, from sales teams to HR to people to marketing and customer service. And we need to make a change. And you're probably here because you want to be a part of that change. And I'm grateful for that. You can head over to parablestory.com to find more resources on how to become the change and how to make a change and how to really build brands that don't suck when you're trying your best to serve your clients and give them what they need and what they care about. On today's episode, we sit down with Erica Rankin, founder of Brodo, and we talk about all things CPG brand, social media haters, and how to grow a brand that really influences culture and is influenced by the culture around. This is a phenomenal conversation, and Erica has poured blood, sweat, and tears into this brand over the past 4 years of her life and then some, and has made an amazing headway. She's got hundreds of thousands of followers on TikTok, thousands of followers on LinkedIn, and is standing on the platform of authenticity and vulnerability. She is a founder that is doing things different. So without any further ado, friends, branders, strategists, founders, here is Erica Rankin.
Thanks for having me.
Erica, I followed you for a while. We've connected recently, and you have one of the most authentic and vulnerable journeys I have ever found, or I'd say one of there's a few people on LinkedIn specifically that I'm thinking of, but you definitely stand out as one of those people. I've seen in a handful of other things that authenticity, vulnerability is kind of like your MO as far as like brand goes, in the LinkedIn and especially TikTok spaces. But I want to start there because I think it's an important, it's just important. It's important for people to, as from a founder to hear something like that. Why did you decide those were the qualities, the characteristics that you wanted to stand on, when it comes to building a brand?
Yeah, well, firstly, thank you. I know we've kind of been friends for a little bit, and yeah. You sent me that really nice card with the pop-up cactus, which was really awesome.
I forgot about that. I need to get more of those. That was the only one I ever got. I need to get more of those.
I kept it. I'm going to keep all of the things that people sent me, and I'm going to frame them on a big thing. So I kept it.
That's so exciting. But, I totally forgot about that. I love it.
Yeah. But to answer your question, so I never intended on like sharing everything initially. Okay. I went on LinkedIn in 2020 because I didn't know how to grow my business. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, doing everything as a one-woman show. I didn't have mentors, advisors, anyone really guiding me, and I kind of hit a wall.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, how do I grow it? Who do I go to? Oh, well, I go to people who've done it before. So I like went through my pantry. Mm-hmm. I found, you know, like Manitoba Harvest, Hemp Parts. I found the founder and CEO of that company, reached out to him. Smart Sweets, reached out to her. Love Good Fats, like all these products that I consumed on a regular basis. I went on LinkedIn and I found these people. And a lot of them were very generous with their time and they got on a call with me. Yeah. And to this day, some of them still are mentors, which is really awesome. But
cool.
When I was doing that, I was scrolling LinkedIn and it was just a lot of fluff. And a lot of, you know, like for me personally, I was, you know, dumpster diving for boxes, going on Facebook Marketplace, yeah. meeting up with strangers for packing paper and bubble wrap,
yeah.
Storing product in my car in my living room, getting pallets delivered to my apartment. And I felt like I was doing things wrong. Mm-hmm. No one was doing things like I was. So I started having calls with other founders and we all had the same commonalities. It was just like, oh, we're in this weird scrappy startup phase. Yeah. And a lot of people are just too embarrassed to talk about their journey and where they're at because of all this other stuff going on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You only see the one side of the coin, the shiny side. Whereas like there's all this stuff below the surface level that happens that no one sees or talks about. Yeah, so
right.
I thought, okay, well, maybe it feels really shitty going on there and you feel so alone in your journey. You feel like you're not doing things right. And I just had this like voice in my head, like playing over and over, like entrepreneurship isn't for you. Like you don't come from money. You don't have money. You've never done this before. So I just didn't want anyone else to feel that way. So I was like, you know what? Let's just like share everything. And then in doing that, it was really easy at first because I didn't have, I think I had 12 connections on LinkedIn and it was like slowly building up to 100 and then 200. And then and I was just putting really everything out there.
At that place too, like the lower numbers,
people,
like no one's willing to shame you at all. To your face at least, right?
I know. So I just started putting stuff out and I was like, this is really easy because I don't think anyone's gonna see this. And then in doing that over the last like few years, I kind of accumulated this like following, like very heavily. I guess my audience is very like much in the CPG space, which is really awesome. So I've just I've been sharing stuff and it's resonated with people and it's been a good way for me to just share my learnings as well and help others prevent like them from making the same mistakes, because it's just a very expensive industry, and if I can help someone, that's great. So and then kind of similar with TikTok, I had a friend who blew up on there, and again, I didn't want to go on there initially. I thought, okay, this is like silly, I'm a millennial, this is for Gen Z's, I'm a little old for this. And then I started posting on there consistently, and then I had one video blow up, and then so that's been another great platform. But people are definitely more mean on there than
on
LinkedIn.
TikTok. Well, because you know, on LinkedIn they don't want their boss to see that they were, you know, a jerk.
Obviously. There's a trail. There's a trail, and it's linked to like a personal identity, right? Whereas TikTok it's like
hide behind the digital wall. Which is a bummer. But I will say, you know, although in the social media world, there is sort of, especially younger generations, there's a lot of that, you know, just kind of hate, like shaming and bullying and digital, all that kind of stuff. But what's interesting about that is you're still combating it with authenticity and vulnerability, which is truthfully, from like a psychological place, what people need to get past that kind of stuff. Which is like an interesting combative sort of, I know it's not really a tactic, but like it's an interesting thing to look at because people are wanting and yearning for more of that, but they just don't know how. Like I think people are insecure or they're afraid or they're worried or fearful of what someone else might think about them. And here you are almost four years into the business, just living out loud failures, successes and all, and it makes me just curious about you and your journey as a founder, as an owner, as someone who's been building a brand. Where have you seen others start to break out of their shell because of what you're doing?
Yeah, I think I get a lot of people that come to me and they ask, they're like, how are you so comfortable putting stuff out online and sharing everything? Mm-hmm. And truthfully, it's sometimes I'm still not comfortable with it. Right. It's very uncomfortable. And when you think about it, the bigger your platform gets, the more eyeballs you get.
Yeah.
And there's going to be people that support you, but there's also going to be people who absolutely hate your guts for no reason and are just very mean and critical towards you. Mm-hmm. And it just comes with it, right? So now it's actually harder for me to put out content. Now I'm a little bit more careful and critical versus when I first got started in my journey, yeah. which is kind of silly when you think about it. You think it would get easier the more you do it, mm-hmm. but that's not the case. And it's not the case with a lot of people too, who are kind of in my shoes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I see people, they come to me and I think when they realize that, oh, it's not super easy for you, it's still challenging for you, it's, you know, I can do it too and it's going to be hard for me. And I think when you start having that conversation, it makes people a little bit more aware and wanting to try to put mm-hmm. stuff out and show that. And then also, I think, and I always say this, you're doing a huge disservice to yourself and others if you're not sharing your journey and yeah. your learnings wow. and your growth. And, you know, like everyone talks about balance and, you know, work and your personal life. And but when you're an entrepreneur, it's very much intertwined. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get people that are on LinkedIn and they comment, this isn't Facebook, you know, when people start sharing their personal stuff. But truthfully, like your everything is connected, you know, like it's all connected. Yeah. And, you know, like I was battling a bunch of mental things last year yeah. and I was in therapy and like I tried to talk about that because, you know, you can't perform your best, you can't be a good employer, you mm-hmm. can't be a good entrepreneur or a father, mother, sister, brother, whatever it is, if you're struggling so much with what's in your head and you're yeah. not taking care of that. Like people need to talk about that mm-hmm. and accept that it's okay to talk about. So yeah. That's a whole nother discussion in itself, but
that'll be on our mental yeah. health podcast next week.
We need sweaters. Yeah. This is not Facebook.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's wow. It's amazing. You know, what's interesting to me is that what we're talking about, there's layers that you're hitting on that I think pertain to culture. There's what's going on in the culture of the world. There's what's going on in sort of the culture ecosystem of each individual platform. TikTok feels different than Facebook, feels different than LinkedIn to most people, right? There's like, there's perceptual kind of culture of that environment, hence why someone says, this isn't Facebook, stop sharing all this junk. But there's also, that's also tied to brand culture. It's also tied to who you say you are as a company and what you stand for as an organization. And what's interesting to me often is that companies come out and they invent some product or service or whatever, and they think it's the best thing in the world, but they don't always look at what's going on in the culture. They think they're going to build a culture, but their like brand culture doesn't necessarily tie to what's happening on, you know, social media platform culture or the world at large. And so I'm curious just to kind of hear your overarching thoughts on culture generally in the world, and then how does that pertain to like building culture within a brand? Because I know, you know, you've now begun to hire people, you work with partners and vendors all the time, and the culture you've created as a founder has for sure impacted for the better or worse the partnerships you've made. And so what's just your perspective generally on culture and brand culture right now?
I think, yeah, brand culture is huge. And for me, because I'm so front facing, mm-hmm. my personal brand is very much tied to Brodo. They're, yeah. you know, intertwined. You know, people think of Brodo, they think of Erica. They think of Erica, they think of Brodo. Mm-hmm. Like I used to have the cookie dough girls, my tagline on LinkedIn, and then yeah. I had an identity crisis and removed it. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's just transparency. Mm-hmm. And culture goes everywhere. It's like internally with like I have one full-time employee.
Yeah.
And then I have like contractors and stuff, but transparency and authenticity, like those are huge things. Mm-hmm. And that ties into not only, you know, the content that I put out, but how I engage and communicate with my employee or my yeah. team members, what I like to call him. And then even like customers. Yeah. And I think people and like a lot of companies, there's a lot of It's inconsistent. And we talked about this before across multiple platforms. So the way they communicate and engage with their customers or followers or whatever via customer service email or on LinkedIn or on Twitter or on all these different platforms, everything is different. All the messaging is different. And for me, it's just consistent. Like, I want to be consistent. And I want to make sure, like, a huge thing that I prioritize and I want to make, like a key thing like within my business is customers are like more than a customer. They're like my friends. Yeah. Like, I send them voice notes and, you know, videos sometimes. They follow me on my personal Instagram. Like, we talk back and forth like we're friends. It's not like, hi, you've reached the Brodo customer service email. Like, we will reply in 24 hours. Yeah. That's not, I'm not about that. Yeah. It's like, hey bro, how are you? Oh, like, you had a problem? Like, let me help you out, you know?
Yeah.
So just like the language is really important. Yeah. Transparency. And then like, I never ever ever want to compromise on any of my values. And with the product itself, like, we always want to have like high quality ingredients. We're never going to take shortcuts, you know? Like, that's just something that I think is really important for me. And then just communicating that too with everyone who I bring on into the company, making sure we're on the same page with everything.
So powerful.
And it's better to do that, lay the foundation when you're small, and then as you grow, then you can continue to like make sure everyone knows what the company culture is and what your values are and what's, you know, important internally, but then externally as well. It's both ends.
You're speaking my language. From a brand perspective, that those inconsistencies will make you lose clients. They're going to make you lose employees, especially to your point, as you grow. If those are inconsistencies in the early stage, they're going to be even worse in later stages. And I've seen you over the past 12 months. I know you made a very big shift in your product, and you and the Brodo brand did, I think, a phenomenal job of communicating that along the way. Anytime you have company change, when you have product change, when you have service change, like, people can lose their minds, and you have higher probability of like losing or winning customers at that stage. And for you, when you went from the like dough carton, you know, product to now the Brodo Bites, what was that transition like when it came to like brand reputability and like brand communication to clients? How did you feel about the change? And how did your customers feel about it?
Well, thank you. It was honestly kind of a hard decision because, you know, as a founder, when you have an idea and you launch the idea and it's a thing, you kind of are married to the idea for a little bit. And I had difficulty really, you know, divorcing that idea. So, but after like doing so much research and talking to my customers, it's like, this is not what they want. I need to give them what they want. Yeah. And if I piss off some people along the way, you know what, that's okay. Cause I need to cater to the majority. Otherwise my business is going to suffer. So, I kind of went back a little bit and then I started working on product development and like fixing all the things that were wrong with it. Like the size, the price, the packaging, the call outs, some of the ingredients, you know, the formatting in grab and go versus bigger tub. So in doing that, and a big mistake that I see a lot of founders do, because, you know, companies pivot all the time. And when they do pivot, they pull away from everything and they stop marketing completely. Like, they go silent, they go ghost mode on like Instagram or, you know, even LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever it may be. And that's probably the worst thing you could do, because you have all this momentum and da 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 da, da, and then you drop off and then it's going to be so hard to get people engaged again, right? And I think it's just a good opportunity to take your customers through the journey and be like, hey, this is what we're doing. We're in the food lab today. We're doing this, da 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 da. And then people get excited, you know? And then once you have the product launching, they know when it's coming, they know more about what's happening. And then you launch it, and because they've been there through the whole journey, they're excited for it and they've seen how hard you've been working on it. So again, like, for me, the culture, right? It's like, you know, my customers are my friends. People who follow me are my friends. I want them to see what's going on. So whether it be, you know, me going into, again, like doing the food testing and like going picking up the new packaging, and unboxing the first product that I've ever seen for the first time and like showing them that. It's like, it's exciting, right? Yeah. And you want to share that excitement and get them excited. Yeah. So that's kind of how it's been for me. It was like a very difficult, like personal transition because I had to like switch into a different kind of mindset where I'm like, okay, putting the ego aside, doing what I need to do, accepting that what I launched initially, like is, you know, it is a failure. It failed. It didn't work. And that's okay. And we're just going to keep trying. And now this new product is launching on shelves. And I think because I was so open with all of the changes, like people, you know, are excited about it and they understand too. They're not mad. They're like, oh, okay, you know what? Like I did like the tubs, but I understand, you know, like I you have to do what's best for the business. So again, transparency is so important and I wish more people understood that. Right.
Well, and I think that's so what you're saying is like you, and this is from a brand perspective, we, this is what we work with clients on all day long, is helping them get to a place where they can understand that inviting the client into the experience or the journey, like inviting them into the story, the narrative, is the best win you could possibly go after, you know, for the success of your business. I just made a post about this recently, but I was in the barber world for a little while, cutting hair, and I remember, you know, being in that world, I could daily test the best experience for a potential client who came in. And what's so funny is that like a mediocre haircut could be totally rejuvenated by an amazing experience. You know, get a drink, get a massage, get a hair wash, like all of those things during the experience makes a mediocre haircut, good conversation, it makes a mediocre haircut great. You walk out feeling, thinking you're $1 million, which is like, most people don't want to hear that. It's like, and for your, you know, like, you want to create a great product, and I know you have a great product, but giving the customer a great experience is 10 times more profitable and brand building than it is just to create a good product. If you don't give your customers a good experience and you don't invite them into your own journey, they likely won't love your product as much. And I think that is such a key to growth. And as I look at sort of, as I look at the landscape today and in the market, you know, we've got different market trends that are driving people and driving decisions. We've got AI and, you know, generative AI, and we've got all this new tech and new sales and people trying to push their courses and coaching and down founders' throats and buyers, you know, just to get in front of buyers. As you look at some of the new evolving tech and the evolving, you know, trends of the world and then social, what do you find as a founder, what do you find to be most important within those trends, within new tech? Where do you see sort of the value and the growth of all of that? But also, you know, is there something you're pulling back on? Is there something you're like, yeah, that's really cool, that's new, it's shiny, but like, we don't need that right now. Like, how are you sort of viewing the what's new in the market and how it's valuable for your business?
I'm not anti AI, but I am at the same time. I think it has, you know, it can add a lot of value and do a lot for businesses, but I think it's important to not lose touch with your customers. Yeah. And I think the companies that are able to keep that personable touch with them and, you know, like, not have their whole company run by AI, they're the ones that are going to win, because people are going to miss it. They're going to miss having those conversations with a person, right? Like even a great example of this is there's been numerous times where I've reached out to different companies, whether it be like on their online chat and it's like a bot and they can't help you. It's all AI. And I'm like, no, that's like not my answer's not here.
It's like,
I need a person.
It's in this frequently asked blog post. You're like, nope, this is...
Like, I just need a person. I just need a person. And then, you know, like, it's just, it's impossible and it's so frustrating. And then, you know, like we were talking about customer experience, and that experience, it makes me feel frustrated. Yeah. So I'm not going to go back to you. If I have a problem again, hell no, I'm going to go somewhere else, right. You know? So, I'm in a business group and it's run by Andy Frisella. So mm-hmm. he is a founder. He has like $1 billion company called First Form, and he has the same, kind of values yeah. as you need to keep people, hire people, have them in the company. And I remember reaching out to their customer service like a few months ago, and they got back to me within like a few hours. Wow. And the email was, hey, you know, it was a person. And then, it's like, if you have like any other issues, like book a call with me here.
Yeah.
Like we can hop on wow. Zoom and I can help you any way that I can. And it, you know, like I saw that and I was like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And all my answers were addressed, everything. And it made me feel like I matter and I was important, and mm-hmm. I'm going to go spend my dollars there versus, yeah. you know, getting the generic email from an AI bot. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, AI can be great. It does have, you know, its benefits that you can implement in your company, and mm-hmm. it helps founders work on the business and in the business, especially for startup founders. If there's ways that you can like
yeah.
put stuff into your company where you can kind of step away and do more important things, then by all means, but don't lose
yeah.
touch with your customers. Like that's the biggest thing I think that matters.
Yeah. Now that you're almost four years into this journey, longer than 4 years. I know there was, you've been journeying for quite some time to get to this point. How did you used to think you had to sort of challenge the narrative in business, and how do you see yourself challenging the narrative that is out there currently, just with founders, with growing a business, with starting a brand, with, you know, getting on social, like all of those things? How do you hope to continue to challenge just kind of stale narratives out there?
I think just continuing to like post stuff that's true. Mm-hmm. And I fell victim to it as well. I started the business. It's weird. You go through this, like you grow the business, but yep. then you have this big personal journey, like dude, alongside yeah. and you just evolve into this human that you don't even, yeah. you know, like you look back and you're like, that was me. Whoa, yeah. that's really weird. It's crazy. But you know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to be a boss. I'm going to work for myself. It's going to be great. I'm going to make money. I'm going to have a big exit. Like,
yeah.
and then you get into it and, you just have no idea how hard it is. Honestly, yeah. I got into it and I'm like, holy shit, this is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have money and I'm not paying myself. And I think, you know, a lot of people go on social media, especially now with like TikTok and yeah. all of this crap out there. You see these gurus that are driving Lambos and they're making figures a month. And they're, like you said, pushing courses and
they're renting, you know, those Lambos, by the way.
I know.
Like, stop going for, no one's buying Lambos.
No. Yeah. Unless you're like, yeah, like 25 years in, and it's like very, very rare that someone's like in their 20s and is, yeah. you know, it's just,
and
it's
so. If they do, they're in a butt ton of debt.
Yeah.
Like, in what world is that cool?
I know. I'm very
fired up about these Lambos.
Yeah. It's just like, it's hustle culture, and even like hustle culture on top of it, and then all of the other stuff too. It's just like,
yeah.
I'm all for like working hard and working long hours if you are passionate about it and you're fired up, but if you're like, you know, neglecting your health and you're not taking care of yourself and you're doing it in a way that's not sustainable and promoting that, I don't like that. Yeah. And I don't support that. Like people still need to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And again, I talk about that a lot on different platforms, but, yeah, I think people just need to be more real, you know, like me selling my purse to pay my rent, or, you know, I live with two roommates. I had to move from a one bedroom condo to, you know, a basement with two other girls, and yeah. that's okay. It's a part of the journey. So,
right.
I think people just need to know what it's actually like to build a business and the sacrifices you have to make. Yeah. And because of all the false shit out there, people start it and then they realize how hard it is, and then they keep switching to new things. You're like, oh, this thing didn't work. I'm going to switch to this thing. Had you had stuck to that first thing, then maybe you would have been way further along, because every time you start something new, you're starting back over, mm-hmm. right? So that's another thing too, is people get discouraged and then yeah. they quit.
Well, and especially this younger generation coming up, it's so, I was talking to some of my younger siblings recently. I was like, well, you know, what do you want to be? What do you want to do? What do you want to, you know, you ask a kid, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And talking to my siblings and nieces and nephews, and they're like, half of them are like, yeah, I want to be like a TikTok star, YouTuber, and, you know, astronaut. And in my brain, I'm like part of me is like, that's freaking awesome. It's amazing that you want to go do all those things. You know, 20, 30 years ago, that just wasn't an option. Heck, when I was a kid, I said I wanted to be a rocket ship. So I just don't, you know, the imagination was wild, but it was so singular minded. And we live in an amazing world where you can do multiple things at multiple times, and you can work from home. Like you can have freedom and flexibility. It's awesome. But there is a culturally, especially I think American culture or really like North American culture, that hustle mentality. I think there is this over zealous desire to be what somebody else is doing. But we do not understand the journey that it takes to get there. And the problem is we look at someone else and we think they're there. Someone could look at you right now and be like, oh, well, she's got, you know, thousands of followers on LinkedIn and hundreds of thousands of people on TikTok. And like, I just want to be there. But here you are being, you know, just wanting like, I want a profitable business. I want, you know, and so it's just, I think the perspective of where someone else is in the journey, whether they've got Lambos or no Lambos, to your point earlier, we need to figure out as individuals, like, what does success mean to us? And how are we willing to like, what are we willing to do to get there? Are we willing to go dumpster diving for boxes?
yeah.
And are we willing to stick with the one thing? Because I think that's the other issue is like, yeah, they get excited about one idea and do it for about 5 minutes. And then they're like, oh, it didn't work. So I'm going to move on to the next thing. Like that instant gratification has overwhelmed our society. Mm. You, I know, have done some coaching with some people in the social space. And I know you've now mentored a handful of people. Where have you, like, what do you tell people when you see that they're like hooked on instant gratification?
You can't. Like, you just can't. You can't get sucked into it. Especially, no, if you want to be an entrepreneur, like, you just, you have to take it day by day. Mm-hmm. And look at wins differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people, and even for me, like, success, when I first started the business, I'm like, oh, I want to make like 500,000 in sales this year yeah. one, let's go, and it's yeah. going to be profitable. And yeah. then you get in and you're like, oh, I really know nothing, and that's not even possible. So yeah. maybe let's adjust that, you know? Yeah. And I think just like setting like mini milestones for yourself, and then mm-hmm. having like a big vision of where you want to be, obviously, but then understand that, you know, like, you don't just get to the top of a mountain, you have to climb there. Yeah. And along the way, like, there's going to be like slips, and you're going to mm-hmm. fall down a little bit, and then you're going to bump your head on some rocks, and it's going to suck. And I think if you just like, yeah, you wasted. You might have a concussion and be out for a little bit, but that's where I am right now. But I think you just have to like adjust your perception mm-hmm. and then surround yourself with other people who are on the same journey, right? And yeah. also just like completely reorganize like what kind of content you consume, because if you're constantly consuming like on Instagram, especially, or TikTok, like, yo, here's how I made $10,000 in 2 days on Amazon, and you can too. And then, you know, you see all that so stuff, and you're I know, I'm just like, oh god, I just, you just scroll. And then yeah. I think it's because you're like training your brain, right? Yes. It's like, oh, there's easier paths, I can make money easier. But I think just like knowing, coming back to your why you're doing what you're doing, why you started it in the first place, and then also whatever journey you embark on, do it because you're passionate about yeah. it, not because you want to make money. Because when you're not making money, and if that's the only reason why you're in it, it's gonna be really hard to push through those days and, you know, get back up when you take a tumble. Whereas yeah. like if you have passion, you remember, okay, I'm here, I'm doing this for a reason, I'm gonna get up, things are gonna come, it's just gonna take time. Yeah. So yeah,
so powerful, considering what you just talked about. As a brand strategist, I'm always so curious about this for organizations. What is Brodo's mission?
I guess that has like evolved over time.
Which is totally cool. I want people to hear what you like. Living, breathing mission statements are great, especially for early stage companies.
Yeah. Like right now, like I want to just create like a really big iconic snack brand that consumers can feel good eating, right? Fuels their bodies, their minds, and they don't feel like crap after eating. Yeah. So, and there's a huge component of nostalgia. So I want people to relive their childhood through their taste buds in a healthier way. So that's kind of the direction we're going with that. But then like on the flip side too, it's interesting because I've tied my personal brand so much with Brodo. Like my mission, I just like want to show people what's possible, right? Like you don't need parents who are entrepreneurs. You don't need like millions of dollars. You don't need a business degree or any of that stuff. You can literally do anything if you just want to, you know, and put in the work. So
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I'm also always curious, you know, you are someone who I think weekly now are looking at other brands and you are practically testing other companies and what they're doing. I'm always curious about this from founders' perspectives. What are a few, maybe one or two brands that you look at in the ecosystem right now, either CPG or anything else that you're excited about and because you believe they're doing something differently?
Yeah, I really like, so Karen is the founder of Bloom, B-L-U-M-E, and they do superfood lattes and she's Canadian. And yeah, they're doing big things. And I'm actually considering eliminating caffeine from my diet. Ooh. So I've been drinking her lattes and they're good. They're a good replacement. So I really like what she's doing. Yeah. Awesome. But there's like there's a lot of like good Canadian brands that are up and coming in CPG. And then like touching on First Form, like they're a bigger company and they're based in the US, they're in Missouri, but I love everything they stand for.
Yeah.
And they have great products. They do like supplements and they have a clothing line, energy drinks, all that stuff.
So good. It's so good. Erica Rankin, I am radically appreciative and grateful of your journey. I think what you're doing is, outside of a business perspective, is just so powerful for people. And I hope you just never stop the journey you're on and sharing your own story. Where can people follow along with everything that you're doing? Where can they get connected with you and Brodo?
So you can find me on LinkedIn, Erica Rankin, and then our website's eatbrodo.com. And we have like a cookie club wait list because we're going to be launching some new products very soon to the US, which I'm excited for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then eatbrodo is our handles on Instagram and TikTok.
I love it. And where can people buy Brodo right now?
If you're in Canada, in retail, we're like launching nationally, so that's exciting.
Wow.
And we don't sell online just yet, but if you sign up to that wait list, we will be launching some stuff there soon.
Wait list, and it's right there on the website. Boom. I love it. Boom. Thank you so much for sharing today, and thank you for keeping Brodo alive.
Thanks for having me.